You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Red Rising being a slow plot? What the hell are you normally reading?
Brain dead? Want to be? Here's Red Rising. Let me stop there. This is going to be good.
That's a decent point.
I can give no ground on this. Here's why it's a bad point. Welcome back to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm the other host, Richard.
Blasphemy has been committed. God and the devil, one of them was working harder, and it was the devil today, because the devil allowed these people to rate the most treasuring, the most precious book ever created, Red Rising. There are people out there on Goodreads, on StoryGraph, that rated this book one star, which, Rich, how blasphemous is that? That's just ridiculous.
That is... I know I bring up this air. I'm supposed to be the antithesis, how much you love it. I'm supposed to hate it. But I love Red Rising, too. Red Rising's a great series. I enjoy Red Rising.
But book this one...
I think it's a really good book. I only object to your five-star, like four-star. Come on. But I digress. It is heresy. It is...
good.
It is sinful to preach such... terrible opinions, and so we're here to critique, lambast, generally refute. So this time we're on the same side. Yeah, we're often on the same side. I should try to pretend.
These are one-star reviews posted on Goodreads about why they hate Red Rising. So this is only book one, Red Rising, only book one stuff. If you don't want to be spoiled on the book, we're going to be talking about book one, Red Rising, and reacting to why people hate this book. Because before we even jump into the first one, you know that this book is the most quote-unquote hated. It's people's least favorite of the series, generally speaking. Do you see that to be the case?
What do you mean by that?
When people are ranking Red Rising.
They have already read the full series.
Full series, and their last is typically the first book.
Yeah, that I don't particularly understand.
You don't?
The third book's obviously worse.
Third? Morningstar?
Yeah. It's worse than Red Rising.
See, we agree. But people watching probably don't.
Yeah, I guess so. However, fair enough.
But then you also get the book one syndrome. I'm just making this up. This is just a thing. But book ones can typically be the most hated in the series too, because your people that fall off of the series, they read book one and they don't continue on.
Well, that was the reason I was asking, is how many of the reviews is like, it's just not their thing. Because there's a very big difference between people saying, like, I've read the full trilogy and the first book's my least favorite, and people that have only read book one and go, yeah, Red Rising's my least favorite. Very different.
A lot of people read book one, give it a one star, and not continue to read on because they hate it that much as well. And that's most of the ones that I assume we're reading. It's the people that hated it so much, they gave it a one star and saw no redeeming qualities. And why don't we just start with the first one?
Yeah, okay, let's go through.
This is Anne from Goodreads, or Anye, A-N-N-Y-E. She posted this in 2019, and Rich, you have it up there. You want to go off the first paragraph? What does Anye have to say about Red Rising?
So, Anye on Goodreads has to say, ordinarily, when I dislike a highly hyped novel, I could chalk it up to not to my taste. But in the case of Red Rising, I truly don't understand what everyone loves. The plot started out with an interesting premise, but quickly became nothing more than Hunger Games-esque generic kids kill kids. But unlike Hunger Games, these aren't random lower-class kids killing each other. These are high-class, extremely talented, well-trained, and educated young people battling for the right to become a highly ranked apprentice.
Now, when you say that to me, I'm going, well, okay,
yeah,
I'm in.
I like the Hunger Games for the aristocracy. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Okay. From the gate, I've made that criticism of, like, I was far more interested in the beginning part of, like, ooh, this political intrigue and, like, ooh, space opera drama, we're going to get the infiltration. And then we got Hunger Games in space. Hunger Games in space, cool, but I felt like I was promised something else. That was my biggest criticism that I would have.
You saw the carving of Darrow and went, that's sick.
Yes.
He gets carved, I want some infiltration.
And then all of, like, ooh, he's now infiltrating the golds. I'm like, ooh, this is really cool. I'm starting to, how is someone going to figure it out? Like, that's what I was down for. And then it was like, okay, now we're doing Hunger Games. And I remember distinctly going, huh, how long is this Hunger Games section going to last? And it just went through the whole rest of the book. I'm going, huh, all right. I thought this was like the midpoint of the book, not the rest.
You thought it was a mini Hunger Games arc?
I thought it was a mini Hunger Games arc. That's what I expected.
I went in knowing it was going to be that kind of framework, which maybe helped. Sure. Anya, so do you agree with Anya then? She says the plot starts out with this interesting premise, but then becomes Hunger Games generic-esque. Are you saying the same thing as her?
Not to the same degree, but I understand the, like,
sentiment?
The sentiment behind it. Yeah, just, hey, I'm less interested in the Hunger Games stuff. I was more interested in the interesting start. But to, like, say it's just generic and, like, to kind of, she's listing all these qualities that, yeah, that sounds pretty interesting.
I think this next paragraph, she starts to go into why she doesn't like the Hunger Games aspect. So I'll start reading this and we can come back and critique. Because all of these, we are going to... The vitriol will grow over time. Okay. She says, the fact that the aristocracy...
Aristocracy.
I was giving the British pronunciation, but that's fine.
Fair enough.
Waste the lives of many of the best kids makes absolutely no sense to me. At one point, the main character addresses this fact, emphasizing that the games are not played to the death, so there isn't really waste. But A, he and other heroes go on to kill a bunch of kids anyways, and B, everyone who leaves the game injured is shunned for life and therefore isn't useful to society either. Great, the game found the one most powerful kid by killing literally 500 slightly less talented ones. I have an immediate rebuttal. That's broiling up. This is the coolest part of the premise to me, is the book, unlike, Fourth Wing has this, Fourth Wing also has the send your kids out into this dragon thing and lots of people die. Red Rising is the opposite of that because it makes sense. In Red Rising, they send the aristocracy, they send the kids there because they're acknowledging the decadence of gold society where the golds are at top. They have all the natural biological every single level of intelligence, strength, they're the best. And you kind of see this in the real world when a really rich person has a kid and they become a trust fund baby. And they have a trust fund. They never actually grow or learn lessons in life because they were given and handed everything. So they've self-manufactured a game which forces these privileged kids to have to do something or grow or give them some type of obstacle. They send them to a mini army camp, basically, of, hey, shaping up so you get this artificial created from the powerful, this artificial way of trying to teach you something that you couldn't have been taught because we handed you so many good things in life.
Well, so there's so many different sci-fi, fantasy, and other fictional stories where you look at not just... Of course, there are, you know, hierarchies and all these different societies, yeah. But often these sci-fi stories will show a certain aristocratic class that is just so fat on the indulgences of their own lives that they're so dumb. They're basically, you look at that and go, how the hell are they at the top of the hierarchy? How do they stay there for any period of time? And then the story will go on and go, oh, you know, this class of people have been there for generations. And I'm going, bullshit. No, of course, no, they're all dumb, stupid, fat, lazy. No, you can't sustain that. That's not going to sustain long term. You can have that for a generation.
Think the humans and Wall-E.
Yeah, that doesn't last very long. You can't do that. Now, Red Rising starts off like, I understand why the golds have stayed in power for so long. They actually prune themselves to actually have some people with a level of grit and determination and some decent qualities of human beings.
Puts a tear to my eye seeing Rich defend Daddy Pierce Brown. This is touching. Stuttering. I'm so happy.
Now, it makes sense. Yeah, it does. It makes me go, this so world is understandable to me.
And the father, father, the father of the jackal. Augustus.
Yeah.
Augustus in this story gives a speech talking about the decadence of society and why they need to harden the golds and are sending them there. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean that they don't have their favorites and favors that they want. They don't. Obviously, he doesn't want his kid jackal to die. So there are some stipulations. Now, however, that entire point about the premise of the Hunger Games, I was already sold. I'm already buying into this because the gold culture, how they don't eat an entire plate. They always leave 20% because they don't want to look gluttonous. They have these self-created rules to make them and harder them so that they don't lose power. And that's the whole point of the golds. And it makes perfect sense because you see how societies come and fall. And what's that typical quote you hear of? It takes hard times creates strong men create good times create weak men, that whole pattern of things. They're trying to stop that pattern and go, no, we're going to have...
Every generation is going to have some hard times.
Yeah.
And from there, we will continuously have strong men.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the whole
thing. And men
thing.
Just everybody. So obviously, it's not a gendered Hunger Games, but it just, this is... I love the premise. Love it. So that's my pushback to just that paragraph.
Quick break from the video to talk about our sponsor, Into the AM.
Go to intotheam.com to get these snazzy t-shirts that were that we're wearing right now. I've got a Gandalf looking wizard on my shirt right now. What do you got, Rich?
I got the old landscape with a cool moon. I feel like howling at it.
They have a lot of sci-fi fantasy designs and plenty more than that. If you go check them out, use code RAMBLE at checkout for I believe 10 to 30% off. And that code RAMBLE, use it right now. Get these awesome t-shirts. They are very comfy.
Help support the channel and yes, you get cool shirts and pants. Variety of things.
I use this one as a PJ shirt, and Nicole is like, oh, what is that? That is cool. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can't have it. They're very cool. Go check them out. Thanks for supporting us if you do. And otherwise, check out the rest of the episode. We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Do you want to go on to what does Anya then continue to say? What could she possibly say about the goat?
And the whole way the book and society treat women is disgusting. In a world that can replace any body part with a new one that enhances brains and senses with technology, there's absolutely no reason other than that's the way it is, major eye roll, for women and girls to remain the lesser sex. And yet in Red Rising, there are only two major female characters, one who is fridged and the other that's damseled. All but one of the main characters, lieutenants, are men. All the advisors are men.
Thoughts on that paragraph?
The fridging one, yes. And I'm keeping my thoughts limited to this book only. I get the fridging thing. Personally, I think Pierce Brown did a good enough job that, I think fridging character generally is just like kind of a lazy thing to do if you're going to do a bit more with it. But I think he made a strong impact to the whole book. And her presence on the page was palpable. It wasn't only... I don't know. She wasn't just motivation for Dara, which she certainly was. She had an impact throughout the rest of society that's felt and then redoubles back on Dara. I think she made a good presence. And even the few chapters she was in, she was impactful.
Still think back to Io's song. And really, Io is being seen through his rose-tinted glasses for Dara, who loves her. I don't want to say idolizes, but just loves Io so much. And a big criticism that is given in the end is then he starts to fall in love with Mustang by the end of the book, which I can understand that too. But so the criticism here is, I'm trying to get to the crux of it. She's essentially saying there's no reason for women and girls to be the lesser sex yet in Red Rising. There's only two female. Okay. So by lesser, is she saying, what do you think she's saying here?
Just because of generally between gold men and women, men are generally stronger, our reality, men are by and large generally stronger than most women. It's how it is by biology. And so in this this fantastic sci-fi setting, why are women not as strong as men when there's all this science and, you know, genetic manipulation and people replacing parts of technology, why are women not just as strong as men? The argument being the genetic manipulation is seems to be kind of done. Like, it was done in the past, and now that is not really the case. Am I kind of on the right path here? It's not like people aren't replacing themselves with body. Like, they're not replacing themselves with machines. They're not doing significant genetic manipulation. It's normally frowned upon. Mm. I don't know. Like, it, the that kind of body manipulation is done, but it's still a subset of society. It's looked down upon.
The carvings,
yeah,
and that stuff. Yeah, I'm cheating a little bit because I'm seeing the what she's saying in the next couple bullet points. Okay, well, let's say those bullet points. Yeah, I think it clarifies what she means by that paragraph.
I'll read on.
Yes. Okay. Read on.
Here are some other things I didn't like about Red Rising. Point number one: rape is constantly used as a way to threaten girls. Ugh. And control boys. Disgusting. Two. The entire book is full of both sexist and anti-sex work slurs. Characters constantly use like a girl or like a pink sex worker cast to denigrate each other.
What's up there, Steve? I think that goes to her prior point. This whole, the gender politics, or however you want to put it in this.
One, I would say this whole color society is not supposed to be emulated. I don't think it was Pierce Brown's intention to like have an entire race of humans, the pink class of like they're all basically sex slaves. I don't think he's endorsing that. That's like a negative.
I think that's world building of going, an entire color that is just sex. Like, that's what they're born to do. How messed up is that?
How awful is that? And is that out of left field of human history of, you know, a class of people being kept essentially sex slaves? No, it's not very, it's not really new. That's pretty, some would say, old timey, but point in. You want to continue on or?
Yeah, I think the big point here, I when selecting these reviews and putting them up here, picked ones that were succinct enough, but had bullet point that's good to kind of go bullet point. And I've seen a pattern, which we'll get into future ones too, of a lot of the complaints about book one has to do with the woman or the rape is used as not just that it's in the book, but it's also used as a motivation or a way to show, hey, this character's bad. And I've seen that as a general complaint of in the games, you have characters and several women. It's used as a plot point to also further cause Darrow's urgency. And you see, okay, that person is committing rape. They're a bad guy. Right.
In many ways, I think it could be seen as the simplistic way of the way for someone to tell if a character is like bad beyond redemption is the rape thing. Like they can do a bunch of evil things, but if they haven't raped someone, they're still redeemable. And then as soon as Pierce Brown goes like, oh, and he raped this woman, it's like, and no more redemption for him. And it's just like kind of a easy clue into like who the real villains are. I kind of get it of maybe that's the complaint if someone sees that as lazy or not interesting. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I see why people don't like it. It's not to your taste. I think what made me not think of it as just simple plot device or just think of it kind of have focus on it going, oh, that's a cheap way of doing it. The two cases where it was most prominent that I remember back to when reading this, one was with Titus, and Titus was the other carved gold that was the contingency plan. If Darrow didn't end up Darrowing,
yeah,
Titus was also there, and Titus was used because he's this huge guy who has all this built up, pent up rage, more rage than Darrow. That's a whole other conversation, but has this rage for, I believe his motivation was, I'm trying to think back, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Titus's family was raped by golds, I think. Or something happened to his family.
The main thing is he's a red who is now in a position of power against his oppressors. And he wants the torture and suffering of golds. That is...
So he does the worst possible thing, and he lets this all out from, he felt wronged, he's going to do equal wrong. So it's him, it's eye for eye.
Yeah.
And that's why he's doing this. So it's, to me, that's going, okay, I understand that character and why he's a villain. I get it. And it's also adding a reflection to Darrow of, hey, Darrow, don't end up like Titus. Don't become, your ultimate rage could look like this. If you just come into the games and start hate all these golds, this is what you could become, or this is what you should not do.
Also, I guess with the whole idea of this Hunger Games setting, the point of it is to, and the other goal to talk about, like, the point is all of the little decadence of society and ease of it that you quickly forget, you know, the rule of the jungle. You quickly forget the, you know, natural laws and just about power and subservience, all these, like, more basic things when you strip away the rules of society.
Yeah.
I think when that comes to play, like, power, dynamics between men and women, like, I think, you know, sexuality and, you know, men being stronger than women, like, that's going to be a topic to bring up in this particular kind of setting. I don't think that's, like, even avoidable,
and
really.
The complaint I can see, too, is she's mentioning the two characters here. You have Mustang and Io, and what is done with those two characters in this book one. I'm not going to talk about future books because this is a complaint
that's not fair.
It doesn't, but this
keep
complaint,
it to this book.
I would say this complaint could only be said about this book.
Yes.
But keeping it to this book, I see why it's used. You see the two female leads or main characters that you could say. And on Io's side of things, because we brushed on the fridging just a little bit. Do you have an issue in general with just a fridged character? Malfoy, it doesn't matter. Just that concept of fridging a character to create a motivation? Because it seems like that's a complaint people have, too, of using character just for the motivation of another character.
I see it as it is often used poorly. It is often used as a cheap narrative excuse, and that's all it is.
Yeah.
It's often done very lazily. But I would... So, in general... Not my favorite plot point, no. But I think Red Rising is the exception to the rule. It did more than just Io died and so Darrow's sad and go on a revenge tour. That's not it. There is a lot more to it. So I think it's more significant.
That's the thing, too. We had an episode, I think it's coming out in the future because we're storing it up, but we talked about tropes versus cliches, and Red Rising has a shit ton of tropes. Hunger Games trope, the fridging trope, plenty that we can talk about. You even have the Sevro character archetype trope.
Yep.
These are tropes, archetypes of other things that you've seen, but Red Rising is special. We'll get into more of her complaints, then we can attack even harder. We can give an iron rein as we get into this next point where she says... You want to go ahead, the main character?
I'll continue with the rest. So her third point here is, I'm assuming her. Did I read it right?
What?
The name?
Yeah, Anya.
Anya. I'm assuming
woman,
but who knows. The main character, whose entire goal is to infiltrate the highest level of government in order to stage a revolution, constantly makes decisions counter to that goal, putting his cover at risk, enraging high-level officers, etc. He even points out he's doing it and then continues to do so. I had to sell, but that's kind of the point. It's the one aspect of Darrow being, you know, his passions overtaking his. I think that's a more narrative instead of him just being a robot. He's a human. But continuing on.
And well, to that specific thing, too, one of his flaws that we'll agree with more on the more so side is he's impulsive.
Yeah.
Whether that impulsiveness leads to good results too, that if somebody brings up that complaint, we could talk about that too, because a lot of people complain about how his impulsiveness doesn't have enough consequences. That's a separate issue. But this first issue is she's saying that he constantly makes decisions counter to his goal. He's impulsive. He goes. You see from the very first chapter when there's this Laurel that he has to get in the mines and the other faction, the other Red company family group, whatever they were called. You have the other Reds that wanted to get the Laurel versus his family, his group that wanted to get the Laurel. And he ended up going into full overdrive, whatever tech term you want to use, in order. He overheated his mind. He just kept going with his uncle and everybody was telling him, don't do it. You're going to kill yourself. He's like, no, I fucking want this Laurel. You see from the start, he sees thing. And even if he knows it's at his own detriment, where he has a broader goal, the goal would be, hey, survive so you actually can feed your family. He goes, nah, fuck it. Goes. So that goes throughout the whole narrative of any time you see him in the Hunger Games, whether it leads to positive or negative results, he drives the plot to light speed.
So that's the question is, her complaint is he is impulsive. Yeah. And the question is that a negative aspect to the story? I don't particularly think so. I don't know how a character being impulsive is a negative narrative point. Just an aspect of his character is that impulsiveness done, because here would be a criticism of he's impulsive when the plot demands it, but then calculated and careful when the plot also demands it. That would be a very good criticism.
Inconsistency
with a character's motivation, but that kind of keeps stays in line.
It stays in line, especially because usually the complaint you get, which I'm sure we're going to get, is that there's a Gary Stu. This is not saying that. She seems to be saying that he's actually doing things that are flawed of, oh, he has a goal, but does things that prevent goal.
Yeah.
But so I agree. Yeah. Okay. Next point. I'll read this off and you go ahead. Start with you fire back at her. Okay. She says this: the characters are all flat and impossible to keep a sorry. Yeah, I butchered immediately. don't ever give me the mic. Don't let him cook. Okay. The characters are all flat and impossible for me to keep straight. 90% of them are big, angry, violent boys.
I mean, there can be a lot of distinction between big, angry, violent boys.
Yeah, that's three different things.
That's
at least three qualities.
You have so many different flavors of big, angry, violent boys. There's a lot of flavor there. You got the Severo flavor of violent boy. You got the tightest flavor of violent boy.
Pax. Best boy, Pax.
Pax is a big, angry, violent boy, but he's a different flavor.
He's a cuddly, big, angry, violent boy.
Yes.
Have Jackal, who's a twisted. He's not big. He's not angry. He's violent.
He's violent. And a boy. There's so many flavors.
Pick your flavor. I mean, come on. So that's right. She couldn't keep them straight. I think they're all very distinct.
That is Pierce Brown's biggest credit of four ensemble casts. He definitely gives all of them such staying power, great character voice. It's one of his biggest strong suits.
You're on the edge of your seat the whole time of when is Cassius going to find out about Julian? Because even Julian, when we were introduced for the little bit, I was going, oh, Julian, this is going to be the guy that, you know, Darrow's friendly with in the Hunger Games portion, and they're going to be a dude. No, he's dead. No. But Cassius, he's honorable big boy.
He's honorable, big, and then becomes angry, violent boy.
Yes. So lots of different flavors.
She is right. There are a lot of, like 90% of them are big, angry, violent boys. But there's nothing wrong with that. There's so much flavor there.
Okay. Her next point?
Yeah, I'll read it. The power levels and physical bodies of the characters are extremely inconsistent. Mm-hmm. The main character is supposed to have had his entire body replaced by enhanced muscle and bones, and yet he rides small horses. His 7-foot-tall beast of a lieutenant rides said small horses. And why do these characters have trouble climbing trees or scaling walls when they're shown to have the power to crush rocks with their hands?
You have a rebuttal?
That's a decent point.
I think the horses...
That's not a bad point.
I think the horses aspect, the horses are also modified. They are not normal, think pony in the real world.
That's perfectly fine. Mm. Her other point of, you know, trouble climbing trees and... you know, scaling walls, and yeah, they have shown like they can crush rocks in their hands. Like, that is a good point. That's a decent point.
I can give no ground on this. Here's why it's a bad point. there's no ground.
Look, you gotta give them one. You gotta give them
not
one.
With my baby. No. Okay. No. So I think
how would you defend this one?
The only way I would have to see the scene example.
Okay.
Because I can see the overall complaint. There wasn't a moment when I was reading it where I was taken out of going, oh, they should be able to do that. Can you think of one that she's talking about? Because I'm just having trouble picturing her complaint with a scene.
I'm not really sure. I do remember there's points of like, at a certain point, if in the beginning, you see the Golds as very much superhuman. They're all they're all vastly taller. They're all, you know, super strong. Super smart, all these different things.
They
are the Ubermensch, really. And ultimately, then when you get into the Hunger Games section, that you really quickly go to the back of your mind that they're all supposed to be genetically superhumans, and they all sound like normal humans at a certain point. Of all of their little struggles of like trying to climb a tree, or they have to scale this wall, or like they just feel like normal humans. I guess maybe that would just be the impression. I don't have a particular scene in mind.
It's been a while since we've both read it, so it would be hard. I wish she brought up a scene, because my general, if there was this scene that perfectly encapsulated her point, I would assume that the more climbing walls or climbing trees portion is something to do more with skill than strength. I'm assuming. So if it comes to some type of physical feat, yes, you're stronger. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're more coordinated.
So sure, especially if some of these characters are, you know, indulgent. They're not actually very, maybe they're technically strong, but they've built up a lot of fat, or, you know, the muscles, maybe they're genetically strong and their disposition to be strong, but they just haven't done those actions and movements. And so they're awkward or what have you.
These are also kids who haven't been in any sort of survival situation ever. Their entire life. These are the aristocrats. They're not Reds. And on the other hand, Darrow, who is. I don't think there's a moment where Darrow has any physical incapability, because he's the perfect combination. He was grown with hardship, and he has the heart of a Red, but now the strengths of a Gold. So I would need a scene to see, but I can understand why that's going on in the back of your head, even though don't attack my Red Rising. Okay. Then she ends with one last paragraph.
Yeah, I'll read the last one off here. I like the initial premise in Red Rising of a lower caste young person disguising as a high caste one in order to facilitate a revolution. But that's really the only pro in a long list of cons. To sum up that point, like, I liked the initial premise too, and that was my overall considerably minor criticism of, like, oh, I felt like I was promised that and I got Hunger Games. But that's this book, and then complaint is alleviated in subsequent book novels. But
still. Come on, if every book was a Hunger Games, it just brings you back.
But no, I understand the point of basically. It sounds to me that she just really did not like the Hunger Games section at all. Didn't like the setup and premise of the highly, despite being a futuristic sci-fi world, still has these gender dynamics, especially when brought back to, like, no society, no civilization, no rules, just survival of the fittest, strongest lead, gender dynamics play out. So I guess she doesn't like that premise.
It wasn't a that mean-spirited one star. That was a very, hey, I don't like this stuff about it.
Yeah.
Not for me. That was not that mean-spirited.
No.
Good on you for that. I hope this next one gets more mean, because I want to be, that didn't cause me to go full Darrow. I'm fine with that. All right. Sam Quixote on Goodreads.
It's a good name.
That is.
I like
that. Like Don Quixote.
You know? I know. It's a Quixote. Good play. It's a good play on the name. I like it.
This is a review from 2015. I think Red Rising came out in 2014. So this is pretty soon after. You get to see what were the early negative criticisms of Red Rising. So this is what Sam Quixote says. Brain dead? Want to be? Here's Red Rising. Let me stop there. This is going to be good.
This is going to be better than the last one.
He says this. Oh, yeah, that's why I picked this one. Okay, this review, by the way, this is, I think, the top review on Red Rising, or one of the top two, for one stars. If you click one star, it's one of the top ones. And he basically just, it's actually pretty funny. Do you want me to play?
Do you want to react to me reading it?
No, because there's multiple characters in this review.
Ew.
There's Darrow and Io. Okay. Do you want to play Darrow or Io?
Oh, whatever you want, man.
I got to play Darrow. Okay.
I'll play Io.
So
do you want the voice, or do you want to, you want to pull out the most feminine voice I can do?
I'd love
or
to see it.
Nice throat. What do you want?
That's what I want to see.
What flavor?
A big angry man.
Oh yeah. Okay.
No.
Io is about to be the biggest, angriest of boys.
So before we get to the Darrow Io stuff, where he mocks their characters, there's two paragraphs before that of we're just gonna read this whole review, then we'll react, because it's a stage play that this person's for the review.
Wonderful.
Okay? So, brain dead, want to be? Here's Red Rising, says Sam Quixote, and he goes on saying, Pierce Brown, I'm a hack writer, but buy my copy of Hunger Games on Mars. I mean, Red Roses, Red Riding Hood, Red Rising, whatever. Here's what I wrote during my shifts at McDonald's. Fuck originality. I'm in this for the Benjamins. Four picture movie deal. Here I come. Mars, the future, generic, yes. Comforting generic, crap, checklist for writing an American bestseller. Hot gel bait ass, crap romance. Dystopian future, tell, never show. Most readers can't tell the difference anyway. Plastic surgery, YA label so no one is intimidated with big scurry, big words or ideas. One-dimensional goodies and baddies because complex characterization is complex. Christian imagery, info dump like crazy and call it world building instead of crap writing. Down-home hero, You'll project onto him, right? Working class, good. Rich people, bad. Because relatable. Working class hero fighting for equality and idealism. America, fuck yeah. So that's the start to this. And now he gets into the stage play between Darrow and Ayo, okay?
Okay.
I'll be Darrow. I just want to mine. I mean, hell dive and bone you, Ayo, my beautiful bride.
No, Darrow, my hunky teen hubby. You gotta be like the savior of Mars or something.
Oh, I think like Disney did a movie like that recently and it didn't do well.
This'll play better because it's about love, but not really. I'll die giving you a contrived reason to go through with this revolution that you don't give a shit about. But I do, and it'll be like romantic.
Fucking hell. So even in death, you're making me do shit I don't want to. So what? Gotta kill some evil dude?
Who knows? Certainly not the writer, Pierce. So shitty, even my surname is smeared brown. But here's what you're going to do that doesn't really inform how you'll change the world. I'm going to die as a martyr, even though the ruling class kill people all the time for no reason, and nobody bats an eyelid. But my death is special, because you are Neo. I mean, the Chosen One. I mean, whatever your name is, arbitrary hero guy. You'll undergo risky plastic surgery to look like a gold. They're the ruling class. Because Pierce Brown reads a Green Lantern comic recently, and color-divided divisions make sense to his infantile brain. All golds are ridiculously intelligent and built like crazy.
Oh, aren't I already shredded? I barely eat, and I'm mining all fucking day.
Yeah, but you're not blonde. Get blonde. Oh, that reminds me, readers, get stupider so you'll enjoy this shit more. And Darrow, we're going to pass on just giving you the dye job and rip up your body for shits and giggles.
So far, it sounds like a lazy version of Spartacus. Crossed with extreme My Fair Lady under the banner that this is some Hunger Games knockoff.
There's also fights to the death.
Right. So it's like Hunger Games 2. It also sounds like I'm getting through all these large life changes extremely easily. Isn't conflict the essence of drama? This sounds terrible.
It's worse. You know, in yet another better book, A Clockwork Orange, where the narrator creates his own futuristic lexicon that's original, but also brilliant because the reader starts to understand what the unfamiliar words mean, even though they're not directly explained.
That sounds vaguely intellectual. Pierce Brown and his publishers are against that on any level because intellectuals are elitist, and this book is about reaching as many semi-literate readers as freaking possible.
Well, Pierce Brown is going to try the same thing here with laughable results. Gumbubble, Brother Man, Bloody Damn are just a few unimaginative examples of his laughable futuristic jargon that takes two regular words and puts them together. Ingenious! No, you're right.
That's retarded fucking...
It gets better, brother! Then you'll have to fight other golds because that's how they're trained to rule over stupid reds. And we'll need some Hunger Games stuff here because that's what readers are expecting.
Ew, what was the point of all this? So in the future, there's a Romanesque dictatorship of humans who've colonized Mars and Venus and other planets? Why has civilization become so similar to the ancient Romans? What purpose does it serve to tell the Reds that they're colonizing Mars when it doesn't matter either way? The Reds can't fight back. They tell themselves they're slaves, tell them they're colonists. They're still under your thumb. This sounds like complete horsewaddle. I suppose it might be saved if the writing was halfway competent, and I cared about the story or characters.
None of those things apply to YA Book on Mars, aka Red.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Life is a workout. And Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Poo flying.
Then it stinks.
Wait a second. You're thinking. That's not good. I better get this crap fest started, so I'm going to run off, get hanged, and you'll have to do all the boring drivel that I just said.
How about you, reader? You gonna sit there and just hang this?
And then this is the reader saying at the end. Reader says, fuck no, I'm gonna read nearly half of you to try to understand why you won 2014 Goodreads Choice Awards and delete you from my Kindle forever. Fuck Red Bile Rising and fuck the Goodreads Awards. End scene. That was a very funny review. I had a fun time reading that with you. That was fun.
I had a good time reading that review. this was fun.
You know what? No complaints to the review. If you make us laugh with your one-star review, you did a good job.
Oh, yeah. No, this is fun. Now, do I disagree with basically everything? Yeah. Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Mainly because I've read drivel before. This is not it. Trust me. Books can get a lot worse. A lot worse. I mean, if you read Red Rising and go, oh, my God, it's so unoriginal. It's so trite. There's nothing to think about here. Well, maybe you just haven't thought hard enough. Maybe you're the one that can't comprehend. Like, the idea of like, man, what the hell? Is just Romans in space? What's the whole point of that? Maybe it has to do with a society that is so, you know, so far flung to the future that they are so stuck in their ways that they can't actually progress as a society. And so they look back on the past and try to emulate the greatness of old because they have nothing to provide and strive for in the future. That is a very common but often overlooked idea of future being so grim that you look back and try to emulate the past. I don't know. Maybe that's something to think about. I don't know.
One of your favorite things to think about, if what is you, as you put it too, in our original review way back, I still think about, is what if racism was correct?
Yeah.
What if, so in our world, people are racist and it's like, oh, that race over there is this, that, which you say in real world. In this world, it's the golds versus the pinks versus the blues, the oranges, the reds. They are biologically completely different. And so when a gold says something about the red being, look at that weaker race down there, that, well, as mean as they're being, it's like, well,
they're technically right on, like, all the biological genetic stuff of, yeah, they're right.
And then how does society then structure with that frame of reference where there's a, not just a hierarchy of competence of, in our world, we have different hierarchies of skill, of competency, of maybe you are naturally talented, but also you developed a skill in music and that's admired, or you have some type of social hierarchy, some money hierarchy, some politics. There's pick and choose how people rise up in a social ladder. There's multiple different ways. In general, you're competent in something. Meritocracies, in general, there's caveats, sure, there's things that can get involved there. But you look at the real world and there's hierarchies that are created, and well, the belief can be that anybody can get there. Da-da. Okay, separate issue. But then in this world, it's what if the hierarchy from when you were born was you are physically incapable of rising up any type of ladder to the tops of society? What if that was just a natural full stop? That is how the world functions.
The interesting part about this, which I liked a lot more to think about, there's plenty of dystopian novels of, you know, the upper class oppressing the lower class. And that's prevalent here in this book as well. But most often those stories are just like, hey, this group of people that are basically exactly the same as the lower class, there's no effectual difference. They're just the reason why the lower class is the lower class is only because the upper class, you know, puts the boot down on them. And that's it.
And then the revolution happens and blah, 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 blah. This one, yeah, there are societal rules and like of oppression, definitely. But that's
with the Reds being in the mines.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But that's not the driving factor of the oppressive hierarchy being in place in the first place. It's that the people literally are different. That the blues have the technical mind, but are also incredibly fragile and weak. They're much smaller. Like golds, we're going to be bringing up the golds and reds because they're the most prevalent colors and different people that you bring up in this story. But then the pinks, and they're a combination of genetic manipulation, but also societal upbringing and enforcement and oppression, all this stuff. It's fascinating because remove the societal rules and the hierarchy is still mostly in place. And you can't just get around that with, let's just break the system. Let's just tear down everything and it'll all equalize. Nope. And what do you do? That's the fascinating
stuff. The rest of the series explores that.
Yes.
Find out next book and we'll see, right?
Yeah, no, but that's the fun thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
But
without a doubt.
So anything else in there that you were like, maybe he has a point, or I think this is a bad point?
The one point where he's 100% correct with this. Okay. 100%. I know Pierce Brown, when he was creating these golds, he's like, they're just going to be blonde, sexy actors. When this gets an adaptation, you know. The golds, they have to be...
I want only the Hemsworths playing the golds. I want every single gold to be a flavor of Hemsworth.
Luscious hair.
Even Mustang is one of the Hemsworths. It's all Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth is Mustang.
That's it. That's what I want. They're all just Hemsworth.
Superman Hamill. What's oh my God.
Henry Cavill.
Henry Cavill plays Victra.
No.
And then,
no, that's the thing.
Yeah. Oh, we can't get. Oh, that's not a character yet. Okay. We got a. Sorry. That character you're not introduced to yet. One, yeah, I did, but there's a character called that.
That's but no, here's the best part is Henry Cavill can play Darrow because then he puts on the blonde wig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So he's the infiltrator.
Ah.
He's trying to be a Hemsworth.
That's right.
He looks almost like a Hemsworth, but he's not a Hemsworth. And the Hemsworths are going to find out that he's not truly a Hemsworth.
This is the best fanfic ever.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. We have this next review. This is our third and last review that we have to break down. This is from Amber in 2014. This was the year that Red Rising came out. And she gave this one-star review. She started this by saying, you know, for a book with such a high Goodreads rating and so many screaming fangirls, I honestly expected Red Rising to be better. I at least expected it to be good. Instead, I was almost sent to sleep by the tragically slow plot and the bland writing.
Let's stop right there. Really?
That's just wrong, isn't it?
Okay, look, you can have your complaints. Like, their complaints were like, you know, humor, taste, it's all subjective. I get that. But Red Rising being a slow plot, what the hell are you normally reading? Like, I gotta know what's on your standard, you know, monthly TBR, because that stuff must be, like, that's heroin.
That's TikTok.
You're watching speed or something.
What Subway Surfer videos are you reading that are in books? Because how do you get more fast-paced? Now, there's other fast-paced books, very fast-paced books, but Red Rising... It's almost like she said that the title of the book isn't Red Rising. It's just, that's not correct.
That's a significant... Look how thin this book is and how much... Like, it's a full-ass story. And you go, man, how is it going to fit in just, you know, just under 400... Jesus. Like, yeah, just under 400 pages. Pretty big text. Because it's fast-paced. Very fast paced. That's the thing. That's what makes it Red Rising.
The plot moves quickly. You get to
every chapter. It's almost every chapter is almost a cliffhanger.
Yeah, it's you're driving forward. There's no slow burn at all.
That's the one. I'm just gonna object. Like that's just a wrong opinion.
That is wrong.
That's objectively wrong. That's not a matter of taste.
And I have to defend my guy Pierce Brown and his incredible writing. Now this is a complaint that we haven't seen so far yet. So. This reviewer is saying bland writing. A lot of people complain. You'll say you don't love his book one. You don't love his prose as much.
I don't love it. I think it's good.
I
do. Like,
I personally love it.
I think it gets better.
He improves as a writer.
Hot take. That's a hot take. No.
But that's a hot take.
No, no, not at all. So the reviewer here says bland writing, and a lot of people can talk about how it feels YA, sounds YA, but just where's my favorite line? Here it is. Oh. The first thing you should know about me is I am my father's son. And when they came for him, I did as he asked. I did not cry, not when the society televised the arrest, not when the golds tried him, not when the greys hanged him. Mother hit me for that. My brother Kieran was supposed to be the stoic one. He was the elder, I the younger. I was supposed to cry. Instead, Kieran bawled like a girl when little Io tucked the homunculus into father's left work boot and ran back to her father's own side. My sister Liana murmured a lament beside me. I just watched and thought it a shame that he died dancing, but without his dancing shoes. On Mars, there's not much gravity, so you have to pull the feet to break the neck. They let the loved ones do it. What a hook. I forgot about that line before. I just watched and thought it a shame that he died dancing without his dancing shoes. I didn't remember. I need to reread this book. Oh, that. So this type of writing to me, you could say it sounds YA. There's complaints, which I get. People can read it and say it feels younger, but bland. I'm defining bland as boring or generic in a way, but he has lines there that are memorable or powerful. Just like that is going, oh,
he has really powerful lines.
What a heavy hitter line.
Also a great style for Pierce Brown that I think combats the claim that he has bland writing. I would say bland writing almost by definition is monotone in nature, of sentence by sentence, similar structure, almost like wall of text. And Pierce Brown does a great job of using very poetic structure. He uses, you know, a variety of different sentence structure, you know, that makes it far more interesting to read. It's not monotone in its timbre, which, yeah, I think that's a strength to him. I would be hard to say that's bland.
He has punchy writing. You're saying, the longer sentence, then I'll go short, 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 longer, short. And at the very least, it's changing up your tempo and going, okay, well, a bland song is going, but he goes, there's a difference in tempo and a difference in the beat. And already that just
the difference
gives a
between
energy.
Elevator music and big band jazz.
And this is jazz.
Big band jazz.
Yeah. Okay. The reviewer goes on to say, those two things, along with an unremarkable main character who tries so hard to be remarkable, made for an awful reading experience. Okay. What do they go on to say? Let's see. I really do not get the hype surrounding this book. The plot is nothing special. Red Rising starts out with Darrow's wife, Io, dying, which spurs Darrow into becoming a rebel and going to a school for the obnoxious and privileged goals. It starts out well. I was interested up until Darrow actually got to the school, and then they started wars and battles, and while this sort of thing usually keeps me interested, it just made no sense to me whatsoever. It was boring and felt contrived, as if these rich people would let their kids die at the hands of other rich people.
Pause there.
Yes.
That's the point. That's the interesting thing of, oh, actually, these golds are here for a reason. That's the interesting thing, because that's not very standard. The fact that this entire color society actually is trying to have some level of competency and have a purpose to their hierarchy of like, no, we're at the top and we got to be there for a reason. We're not just going to sit on our laurels. It's like, oh, that's, despite all the evils, that is an admirable quality of going, no, we need to deserve our place in society. That is at least the one positive quality about the Golds. It's at least in the right direction.
And it's at least why they're attempting to keep their place in the hierarchy. There is a
distinct difference between people at the top of a hierarchy going like, oh, no, we belong here because of our parents and just like, and
well,
taking
think of
it for
that
granted.
Our genetic, and that's all we need.
Basically just sitting on the achievements of others forever. And the golden, this section of the golds are going, no, we're going to temper you. You will need to earn your place on top of the hierarchy. You need to actually survive. You need to show some grit and merit. That is at least a somewhat more positive quality, or at the very least more effectual for keeping a long-term reign.
And then you're exactly right, the kids as well that are being sent to this Hunger Games are the elites. So if you want to be what is the term? I need to reread this book. The term for the gold of golds. What is the term that they use for the holy crap?
Peerless gold.
Yes, there it is. And so I knew you were a fanboy from the beginning. I know you have all those.
I'm a fan.
So you have all of these. Go ahead.
Yep. I'm just going to say, Pierce Brown's going to watch some, like, if he ever sees something of our content, sees one of our TikToks or something, he's going to be like, Richard's the curmudgeon that doesn't like my stuff. I like your books, man. I like them. But I got to fill a role.
All right. So the reviewer continues by saying, I started skim reading after about 200 pages. Well, don't skim read a book.
Give your opinion,
yeah,
don't admit that, because now your opinion is significantly reduced in credibility.
Because now, you didn't read. No wonder it sounded bland. You only read every five words, and so it didn't make sense. You were going like, okay. So I started skim reading after about 200 pages because Red Rising completely failed to hold my attention. At the same time, I wanted to get to the end because maybe I was being too judgmental and the book was going to get better. Everyone had told me that it was crazy and mind-blowing, so I had to go on, right? Wrong. I shouldn't have bothered. By the end of the book, absolutely nothing changed. Darrow was still an annoyance. The students were still doing stupid things. The ladies of the novel were still being ruled by the men, which, by the way, makes no sense for reasons, and I was still effing bored. Darrow is an awful character. At the beginning of the book, I was ready to get behind him because I thought he was going to have a Spartacus storyline going on. You know, one where he finds a reason to fight for the lives of the oppressed, and that reason should have been his wife. But the novel progressed. Darrow seemed to forget about Io and the cause and was more interested in talking about himself. I don't really care if you are, and always have been, supposedly gorgeous and great at everything you do, Darrow. I really didn't like how Darrow was naturally the best and most gifted at everything. Yes, he was genetically modified to be that way, but even his apparent intelligence was superior to everyone else's, and how the fuck did those Ares people know that he'd be the one? Do you think you're Neo, Darrow? Okay, couple things. Titus.
I can tell that they skim read.
They missed the Titus portion where Darrow was not. No,
they had contingency plans. That's the point.
So Titus was contingency plan. Darrow wasn't there all hauling everything into him, although they did put a lot into him and Titus. They picked people that they thought would.
But they also have other plans. They're still doing other stuff. This is like, this is a long-term gambit of like going like, mine is like, let's try this out.
It's they had other shit going on.
They got other things. It's like, this is one of the many avenues. Whichever one leads to the most fruitful endeavor, that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, to Darrow, it's, you know, we're following Darrow. Everything to him. Everything is, it feels like everything is focused on him because it's his story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Sons of Ares are not 100% only focused on him.
He is one of the plans. And he's not even the only contingency plan of turning red into gold. Yeah. They also have multiple of those plans. And who knows how many more than Titus that we don't find out about. But you at least know there's another, which can imply, this is a thing they're really infiltrating on. So that's on that one hand. So no, he doesn't think he's just Neo. That's why this chosen one type for why Darrow is selected makes so much sense. It's not that he was just picked out of a straw and then, look, it's Darrow. We're following him for a reason. And some of the other complaints made were that Darrow seemed to forget about Io. And that Darrow's naturally the best and most gifted at everything. Any contentions to those two pieces?
I definitely kind of felt at the time, especially, I think the love story between Darrow and Mustang, to me, felt rushed for this book. Because I thought Io was far more present in his mind, and for him to fall in love with Mustang, it felt a little rushed to me, personally. So that was my personal contention with that. But I don't know. That's a minor gripe, personally.
And then what about the point with didn't like how Darrow was naturally best and most gifted?
He has that main character syndrome. But I get it. He's kind of a Gary Stu. His major flaw, if he has one, it is he's impulsive. And that's his strength and also his flaw. Some would say he has a lot of rage. I would disagree. But
so to those two points, the first one of Darrow seems to forget about Io and go into Mustang. I think the one thing that's done here, I do agree it's could seem a little bit rushed. I'll give that while saying why it didn't bother me, why it didn't affect my reading experience, is Darrow was in the games for over a year at this point, and when he is starting to have these feelings for Mustang, he is acknowledging in his head going like, EO's thinking EO and going like, this is kind of wrong. And the book is so fast paced as well that it does happen within a couple chapters, or it does happen where he meets this Mustang figure and then trauma bonds in a way as they're in these games. And you could see how he then starts to have feelings for Mustang. So I think on part of the surface, I also think the thing that made it more believable for me was Darrow in the mines was 16 and saw EO as this perfect person of, oh my God, EO is everything. Lives a year, is now 18 by the time at the end of the book, because this just happens over the carving and then the games are that long. So then he turns from 16 to 18, trauma for a lot of the time in the Hunger Games portion. I could see how a teenager would then go, oh, another woman who is, we've gone through experience together. This kind of feels wrong because EO, but
it has been a couple years Mustang.
It's also been a little bit. So it's done in a sensible way. I don't think that's out of the ordinary that a character like Darrow would do that. The caveat is he is there for EO. He is so, every decision he's making is based on EO's sacrifice for him. And I think he justifies that with going, he's still going to fulfill EO's goal. He's still there for EO's purpose, but that doesn't mean he has to not be with anybody for the rest of his life. That's a part of this. You don't get more of that in the book one. That's explored future books. So as far as the book one critique, valid critique.
Yeah.
Didn't bother me, but I can see why it bothers people.
Yeah, it bothered me because I think Pierce Brown did such a good job with EO, in all honesty. He fridged the character in the first couple chapters, but she has such a presence throughout the whole story with Darrow himself, but also with her being this martyr figure across this whole the solar system, and her song being brought up by even other golds and things. All this other stuff, is she has such a strong presence throughout the entire story and feels so important to Darrow. So when it happens of Darrow falling in love with Mustang, it feels off. So that was my personal contention with it.
I get it. And the contention it makes going forward, the interesting part about it is he's here to topple the golds. How can he do that if he's also starting to be friends with and actually love a gold? That's the thing of where it starts to get more complicated. He went in here with a goal in mind, and now it's complicates it. So as far as what it does for the plot, good. Character, I could see the issue there. Okay. The next portion was about how Darrow is naturally the best and most gifted at everything. Now, him being amazing at things is a part of it. He was a red and hardened, but also has all the abilities and strength of a gold. Also super intelligent. He
also, because he's a red, he has this fierceness and diligence. He's willing to train and work hard compared to golds that don't, because they have all these genetic gifts, they don't. Many of them, at least, don't train nearly as hard as Darrow. He wants it more. It's sure he is great at everything, but
So is Superman. So is it? You have a lot of characters.
Batman.
Batman. So you have these characters who are Darrow's flaw in the book is not that he's weak. I think you have to weak physically. You can be a character who has physical strength and is intelligent and still have flaws, because his in this book is he doesn't know how to lead. He's not a good leader. A lot of that comes from his impulsiveness. And I think the impulsiveness carries over with that rage he's feeling. It's not a rage that maybe, we've talked about that already. But he has these rage, which put an asterisk there from Rich's end, but rage, impulsiveness, and leadership. Those are the issues he's dealing with. He is not a character where I just don't, when I'm reading a book, I don't go into it and see just because a character is smart and strong. If that's what they are and they solve their problems, and let's say, for example, it is presented that the character is super strong and this Darrow's character, he's strong and he's intelligent, and the problems he has to overcome in the book is in the games. When he's in the Hunger Games, what he has to do is he has to out arm wrestle everybody. And his problem, I'm doing a very simple thing, because you could, okay, have it like this. In the Hunger Games, he has to one-on-one everybody one at a time, and he has to beat them all. That's what he has to do in the games. Would not be a compelling book because, Darrow's the strongest. He is strong. So what Why would that be a compelling thing? You're not giving him the obstacles or flaws because that's already his strengths. Thing is, it is not represented in the way of like Darrow has to out-punch somebody in this book and has to... you have Pax, an interesting scene with Pax, but he also has these smart tactician ways of making the plot interesting. My point is being that Superman, when you're presented a Superman story, you're not looking at him and going, Superman story's here, his problem to overcome, especially in the classic sense, the classic Superman comics, the problem presented isn't he has to outpunch bad guy. It's usually the kryptonite is his failure or Lewis in his connection.
Yeah, Lewis. Good old Lewis Lane, his buddy old pal.
Lois.
Lois.
Lois, sorry. Louie. Louie.
Good old Louie Lane.
Lady Louie Lane. But the problems that a character overcomes have to come to their flaws that are outside the strength that are already presented. That's just the point of wants, needs, what are your actual obstacles. And yes, Darrow's a strong character. Does that make him a bad character? No, I don't think so. Okay, Rich, do you want to continue with these last two paragraphs from this reviewer? And we could finish off with an actual Iron Rain. Maybe this will get us...
Maybe this will get us upset?
This will.
All right. I'll read the next one here. Speaking of genetic modification, I would like to point out that this world building makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Oh.
And I refuse. I refuse! The women in this book are mostly oppressed by the men. They are said to be weaker. Even the Golds, who have been genetically modified to be stronger, and so should be equal with the men of the same rank. And rape is brought up regularly, and from what fellow readers have told me, dealt with poorly. I can't comment on how it was dealt with, because I wasn't paying attention. Pause.
We just can't, take it seriously anymore.
Yeah, I'll continue, but right there. I just noticed that the characters talked about it a lot. And anyway, it doesn't make any sense for the women to be the weaker sex when genetic modification is possible. And it makes even less sense when it's included in this world and not commented on. Nobody said anything about changing the fact that the men ruled the world. To this point, I just want to get out of the way of like the genetic modification of it. I think it makes complete sense, personally, because it is not... taking the human race and on an individual basis, they didn't genetically modify humans to be like, oh yeah, we're going to modify it so humans and men, like women and men are of the same strength, muscle mass, bone density, all these different things. No, they basically genetically modified races of humans. But they're still humans with you look across almost many different species structures, but there being a weaker and stronger sex is fairly normal pairings, and especially in humans. It's not that they genetically modified all humans to be equal. It was, no, we're going to have this group of humans have these certain advantages, these have these different advantages. I don't know. It makes sense to me.
Especially because the humans aren't AI and robots. If you create a robot that looks like a woman and a robot that looks like the man, they'll have identical strengths. If you give them identical strength, because you're just building parts and putting a face that, like, oh, that looks womanly, that looks manly.
Yeah.
What's happening here is the women in this world still are childbearing. There are still biological functions of each sex that, for example, women, this is biology just outside Red Rising, like have to have more higher percent of a fat storage because the ability to have children is necessary to have higher fat storages. Mm-hmm. It's healthier. When you see men online, they're just jack shredded, have so many abs, like abs on top of their abs. Their body fat percentage can get down to the point, okay, maybe not 0.1, but 1 to 4%. Insane levels, but woman, it gets unhealthy to get that low at times because you miss your period, etc. Because there is what you can do, but it's the sense of that's just one example of biological reasons for then what you do is you then modify the base sex of men and women, and then when you do that in the Red Rising world, there's both are incredibly stronger.
Yeah, gold women are vastly stronger than basically every other man underneath, like, the color hierarchy there, because both it's basically a genetic modification of types of humans.
Yeah.
And so within that pairing, there's going to be genetic differences between men and women, but it's still separate. I don't know. I'm trying to get it across to people. Like, it's not every single person's a test tube baby of just complete modification. They're just now separate races of humans with genetic differences.
And on top of that, think of what the society is in Dread Rising. It's so Roman inspired. Talking to Augustus, you're looking at a society that looks back as well. Mm-hmm. And in this society, they're thinking more traditionally as well. This is a society that is trying to emulate they're looking at Rome and, oh, what the decadence of society is, how do we survive where others in the past failed? But they're obviously clearly inspired by other civilizations in the past. So that's another thing of when you just look at how the society is structured, there's still a lot of values there's a lot of things that the society sees as good and positive that they're taking from the past as well. This isn't sci-fi future cyberpunk where you're looking at genetically modified to the extent that this reviewer is thinking about, where certainly there's your sci-fi books where
there are those stories
plenty of those stories. This is not that story. And I get the point because in this book, as far as the golds go, you have Quinn, you have Mustang. I don't want to get further into future books. However, there are powerful gold women. Mustang is one of them, but
there's races within this that is not shown that do have genetic differences between the sexes of, like, you'll see things later to come. But
this one was a very tunnel vision book, so you don't get expanded in that world a bunch because we are in a Hunger Games setting.
But the simplistic factor of the golds were genetically made to be, like, basically human, but stronger, faster, smarter in every way, but still recognizable as, like, human. Like, they're all, I don't know, very close to biologically compatible as humans are today, but just better in all those other ways comparatively.
Yeah. How do you feel that all the golds that were modified, to my recollection, none are bald? So the superior all of them have luscious, long, blonde hair.
Yep. That's a genetic.
It varies a little bit. It's a genetic positive to have luscious, horse-like hair.
It is. It is a genetic superiority. I would be insulted if future and that they're playing around the genome and going, nah, we're gonna leave male patterned baldness. That stays. Cancer, we're gonna eliminate that one. Height, yeah, we're gonna make everyone 7-8 feet tall. Male patterned baldness, let's keep that one.
Yeah,
that
why
seems
not?
Like a positive. No, let's remove that one.
What do you think about gene editing?
I'm generally afraid of it. I'm not a big fan. We're starting to get into
We should have a whole episode on that. We should read a book specifically on that. Do we know? Does anybody have recommendations on a sci-fi book that explores gene editing? I'm curious.
Recently in the news, as of filming, there's been some stuff where new gene editing techniques, it's already here, of, like, not just being able to choose the sex of the child, but, like, being able to screen for intelligence and different disease likelihoods and a bunch of different genetic dispositions. We're already there, and it's scary. And I'm not a fan.
I'd be scared too. Well, there's a lot of implications. We're gonna have to do some episodes on that. We'll solve it. We'll figure it out.
We'll solve the problem. We'll tell everyone else what the right answer is, of course.
TBD on that. Let us
soak in on it. The fantasy sci-fi guys are going to we're going to hammer this one out.
We'll let you know what the medical field and the law, we'll figure it out.
Just give us
a couple business days.
I think all the people making AI have not read enough sci-fi books. And irony, I know.
Yeah.
Those are the exact type of people that would be reading sci-fi books. But enough of them seem to not actually be reading and comprehending the lesson because they're still fucking making it.
They're doing the cliches.
They're still doing it. they're a bunch of nerds. They probably have read Neuromancer. They've probably read, you know, iRobot. Well, if they did, why are they still doing it? Why? Why does it still exist? Why aren't there a bunch of nerds saying, like, no, thank you. I'm not going to do that one.
No, thank you.
Ugh. We're gonna grow up in an AI hellscape. I'm not looking. This is not great.
the last paragraph.
Sure.
You know, for such a dull book, Red Rising gave me a lot of rage. I wouldn't recommend it unless you want to torture yourself, or maybe you have nothing else to read, in which case I would suggest finding a newspaper because you will find the same asinine characters and shitty plots in the daily news.
That's a really interesting way to say that the characters feel real, human, and alive rather than trite, fictitious characters.
Yeah.
What an interesting way to compliment the story.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, what he said. Yeah. Those were three reviews that we looked at for One Stars of Red Rising. So there were some overlap of complaints. We saw some overlap. Also some differences in them. Did anything surprise you for any criticism of the book, or have we all heard it before?
I have heard the sexism argument generally, and for the most part, yeah. Is most of the characters men? Yeah. Is the main character a guy? Yeah. And it's just like, that's the focus of the story. It is what it is. However, I would say there's a lot of women like these stories too. So it's not like there are those books that are targeted toward men, like heavily targeted audience. I don't think this is one just by evidence of how many women really do love these books. And I don't see the same thing for Conan the Barbarian. Doesn't seem to be the case. So
only caveat is, where's a picture of Pierce Brown? That's a good looking man.
That is a good
looking man. That is why I'm a fan of the books. Personally, I think that's why a lot of guys get around like, I want to look like Pierce Brown. But also,
that's very true.
Pierce Brown does have that. Hey, if I was a woman too, I'd go, yeah, I'm going to read Red Rising.
Yeah.
Of course.
go down to the inner sexist. You're like, I look at that attractive man and think, yeah, I want that man to tell me how to think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, me and all other women. Yeah.
Now, the big thing is too, I think, don't want to go beyond book one because we said we would just stop here. The only thing is that the complaints that are made about, oh, this is such a guy's book, or you're looking at the gender dynamic in here, all goes away.
I just want to caveat, get that out of the way here. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with a book being focused toward men. It's perfectly fine.
Oh, totally.
If a book has mostly men in it, cool. Like, awesome. It doesn't. That's not a negative quality.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
A book that has all women in it is also cool. Like, that can be the story. That's not a negative quality.
You could have 12 men that are very angry and make a movie about it.
Yeah, you could have a story with
women
exclusively
talking.
Only men talking.
And women talking is a
and
movie.
And women, not the best comparison.
Yeah, but I didn't like that movie.
Compared to a great movie.
That
was a bad movie.
But the point of that being is
the point stands.
The complaints though about book one, I don't think it's just that it's guy cast. It's more so how they use sexual assault or how rape is used in the book and the fridging of EO. Those are the things that are more focused on as complaints about it. And that's why I'm saying those are in the future books, not complaints. That portion isn't. However, for the book with those two complaints, the reasons we gave throughout this is why we think it was still very incredible narrative. Why it sounds like the book is awesome. This book is for everybody. There's not a single person, if you open up your heart to Pierce Brown, not a single person will dislike this. It's amazing. It's a 5-star book, right, Rich?
All three of these people, they were just, they didn't open their heart wide enough. They kept the door closed just a little too much.
Yeah.
Open your heart wide for the glory and love of Pierce Brown.
That was an episode on our reactions to 1-star reviews for Red Rising. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's Durafighter interior paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's Durafighter paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.